Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
You ever get frustrated that you can't watch certain live sports events because they aren't televised or available in your country, like this country, the United States?
Absolutely. I think we've even talked about that a few times on the air before. Luckily, with our friends at NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country that is showing the sporting event you want to watch, so you don't miss out and you can catch all the action live.
Now, you know I've had a lot of problems with my internet providers over the years doing this show. That's why it's called the Big Audio Nightmare. So I've heard that VPNs are like great for online protection, but I'm already having trouble with my internet speed.
Yeah, good news here though. NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world. I don't even notice it running, so I can stream in game online with no buffering or lagging. Even more than that, NordVPN prevents my internet service provider from throttling my bandwidth, like it sounds like they were doing to you, Mike. So I have a consistently reliable internet connection, and I think they'll do the same for everyone listening.
I heard it's the price of a cup of coffee every month, and you know how much I love my coffee, so that's a small price to pay for premium cybersecurity and access to a vast amount of entertaining content from all over the world.
Absolutely. I think what people can do right now, they can grab their exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/f4w to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and 4 months for free.
No better price than that. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee.
Again, that's nordvpn.com/f4w to get your discount and 4 months for free.
Hey, Adam.
Yes, Mike.
Have you ever been a wayward son?
I've never been a fan of that song, and I can't say that I'm too big of a fan of the people who use that as entrance music, at least two out of the three. I don't hate him. I'm not a cornet guy, but I just, God damn it, I can't get into the Young Bucks no matter how great their matches are.
I was never a big fan of the song, and then I had to travel through Kansas on the way out to Colorado. Drove out to Colorado, and as you're going through the great United States, and you're traveling across I-70, and you go to Missouri, and there's St. Louis, and then there's Kansas City, and then you keep going, and it's Kansas. And I understand why people in the Old West went nuts, because you see the mountains, but you never get any closer to them. You just keep driving on flat land with corn everywhere, weird-looking silos that look like they could fall down and a missile could come out of them, and Bob Dole signs. That's all I remember about Kansas.
Bob Dole signs.
That's
Wow,
it.
nothing says the elite in all elite wrestling like Bob Dole signs.
That's it. They may have more in common than I know, but I don't know that much about them personally, and that's okay with me.
Well, one thing, if you're talking about Bob Dole, Jeff Jarrett looks exactly the same as he did when Bob Dole was running for president. I was watching the Full Gear pay-per-view with my close longtime personal friend and other podcast co-host Jeremy Diemer this weekend. And I could not get past how Jeff Jarrett, outside of maybe one or two wrinkles and longer hair, looks exactly the same as he did at like Bash at the Beach 2000, much less 10 years ago in TNA. It is bizarre.
He's amazing. He's absolutely amazing. He really,
And he
really is.
moves. He moves the same way too.
Yeah.
It's not like he moves slower. It is so weird how that man, when you look at all of pro wrestling, people that are his contemporaries or were his contemporaries who are no longer with us, who are certainly at the very least no longer able to get into the ring, if nothing else, whether it be genetics or taking care of himself, Jeff Jarrett has maintained.
He has indeed, and there are a lot of people who have felt a certain kind of way about that, but when it comes to Jeff Jarrett, I will always have a soft spot. He's just always been one of my favorites, even when everybody else has been driven nuts by him. That's why as soon as he came out, I went and I tweeted out that video from 1988 of Expose Point of No Return, and there's all those highlights of Jeff Jarrett against Curt Hennig and against Nick Bockwinkel, and you look at his face as he comes out, and he that just had that smile and those cheekbones. It's just something about Jeff Jarrett. Where
that video, by the way, that you just talked about with the Expose music tracking and him clips of him wrestling Bockwinkel and everyone else, that exact video aired on an episode that we reviewed. I can't remember which TV it was, but that we reviewed a season or two ago on Wrestling at Random. That exact video.
It's crazy. And just an old pro and can walk and talk and still go enough when he needs to. And I got a huge kick out of, and it was bizarre, but Jeff Jarrett and Sting standing across from each other and then hearing the crowd actually chant TNA and Sting having a look on his face like they're actually chanting TNA was the most ridiculous thing that I've ever seen.
It was the ultimate what look on his face. And I think everyone watching around the world had that same reaction. When you think about all the promotions that Jeff Jarrett's worked, one of the few major promotions that he hasn't worked, at least I'm pretty sure, I scoured Cage Match and Pearl of Love to make sure, and I can say definitively that Jeff Jarrett has not competed in Stardom.
He has not competed in Stardom, no, I don't...
Yet,
which doesn't mean that he won't show up and hit somebody. I mean...
Well, think about the guitar. Maybe he... And whoever, I don't know if he gets a woman joining the group with Jeff Jarrett and Sanjay Dutt and Satnam Singh, maybe he and said unnamed woman took offense to Hiroshi Tanahashi and Utami Hayashishita's air guitar playing. And maybe he will bring more than an air guitar to counter them.
You know, I know we're going to start with that, but honestly, if he's going to hit somebody with a guitar, Fukigen Def, I'm sorry. It's got to be you. It's got to be you. And we'll get to your match a little bit later on as well, too. But
I don't think she would mind that as long as it got her on the cover of Tokyo Sports.
That's
her dream, so let's make it happen.
That is a very fine point there. But, Stardom, even though New Japan's got a lot going on and a lot of moving parts, including working with Stardom, in the last couple of days, it has been Wonder Rings weekend. You know what I mean? They have dominated headlines, and deservedly so, for the pay-per-view a couple of days ago, and, of course, the historic crossover show at Ariake Arena, which, obviously, there was New Japan there, too. Big announcement of Kenny Omega coming back to challenge Will Ospreay for January 4th, and I don't know if those tea leaves means that Kota Ibushi and New Japan's relationships are okay. I wouldn't think Kenny Omega would be going under there under any circumstances if he didn't feel as though Ibushi was at least being treated fairly right here in this present moment. So, you know, there's a lot to get into that way as well, too. But a really great showcase couple of days for Stardom.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, you mentioned 1,600 people the night before historic crossover. For a big pay-per-view in Osaka at Aeon Arena, which we'll definitely talk about that as well. But the historic crossover show, you know, I hesitate and I hate to say, oh, well, like, this was a perfect show, or there's nothing I could say bad about it. But honestly, there's nothing I can say negative about this show. For someone who's been watching wrestling for 35-plus years, I know you're at least in that camp, if not longer. It's pretty rare at this point that you can come away from a show and just be like, man, I thoroughly enjoyed that. I smiled the entire time and everything just worked. But that's how I felt about this show. Now, 7,100 people, I believe that's for a New Japan involved show. I believe outside of the joint show with Pro Wrestling Noah earlier this year, rounding out the trio of Wrestle Kingdom shows, I believe that's the biggest non-Tokyo Dome crowd that New Japan has had since the pandemic began. So, I mean, that's interesting in and of itself that you look at that and the Noah show, and those have been their two best drawing non-Tokyo Dome Wrestle Kingdom shows of the pandemic era. That's you know, a bit of a message that maybe it's actually a good thing that we're finally out of the isolationist era of New Japan Pro Wrestling. And maybe that's what people want to see. They want to see different things. But the takeaway from this show as a whole is just how, you know, on paper you look at it and you say, you know, well, yeah, Tanahashi and Hayashishita, that works. Julia and Zack Sabre Jr. together, that makes all the sense in the world. Shuri and Tom Lawler, like, of course, they're both UFC former competitors. That makes so much sense. You know, or Starlight Kid and El Desperado, how could you go wrong there? You know, or even Taichi and Meltier. All those things that you're like, yeah, I bet that'll really work on paper. And then actually seeing it in front of you in the ring, it worked better than I think anyone could have anticipated. And it felt so right to the point to where I don't think either company, and obviously they're both under the Bushiroad banner, but I don't think either company is going to have a choice to make this a one-off even if they wanted to. It worked so well that I think they're going to have to do this on a somewhat ongoing basis, at least annually, if not more common than that.
Definitely in the States, it better be more common than that. And I think just by the nature of running shows in the UK and in the United States, wherever a Stardom person appears, whether it be on a Strong show or any of that, yeah, I think it is going to happen more. And obviously, this is new ground for New Japan. They move like a glacier sometimes when it comes to progress on these things, but as you mentioned, everything worked. That was, you knew it by the second the first match was over. It's like, okay, just saw one with Tom and Shuri and Zack Sabre Jr. and Julia. It was like, that was perfect. And then Taichi comes out, they do the entrance, and it's like, you know what? It could stop now, and everything worked perfectly. And then it just kept getting better. Even Goto and Micah together were a perfect, they seemed like a perfect team. Those teams, that was my biggest takeaway, like yours right off the bat, was everybody, not only were they placed perfectly, they played off each other wonderfully, more wonderfully than could have been imagined. So I thought all that worked out fantastic, obviously, there. So will we see it on a very regular basis? No, but on big shows, on shows where, look, Zack, if you don't have a big match or a feud that, let's say, Zack Sabre Jr. and Taichi are in on a big show where it's like, why not have them team with, you know, Starlight Kid and face three other people? Why
yeah,
not?
Do Taichi and Tam Nakano against Zack and Julia. Like, well, there's so many different options.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Tom's over on a tour, you know, and he should be over on a tour one day. And again, so you don't have a massive thing going on at a smaller show. He teams with Thekla. To me, if you can get synergy going, it's only going to be better for Stardom, because Fumi Saito said this again on his show. We've said it on this show. We know it here to be true. Not everybody that watches New Japan watches Stardom and vice versa. So this show, as we go through it, again, I thought it was a great introduction both ways to both sides. And if you aren't into it, you know, again, there are going to be some people that just, it's not their thing. They're not going to like it. But Stardom's, again, we know it's a good product, but not a whole lot of other people. Again, relatively speaking, the universe is small.
Speaking, exactly.
So that's why, and again, New Japan here in the States, somebody asked me on Hive, because I'm on Hive now at Semper.
I'm getting on there as well. I'm getting on Hive. There's also some new, very Twitter-like social media platform that's just in the early stages called Post.
I saw that one too. Yeah.
Yeah, I got in on the beta for that. So I'll definitely be letting everybody know where I am on there as well. Yeah. And I'll have to follow you on Hive. Yeah. I'll have to ask you exactly how to do it. I created my account last night, and I'm an old man trying to learn new tricks, so I'm not entirely sure how to use it, but I'm sure I'll get up to speed. I'm not anywhere near that much of a Luddite.
Well, say that's why I like it. It's very Twitter-like, but people can ask you questions, and it goes into kind of like a special section. So one of the questions I was asked was, what do you think about Stardom? You know, can they hit it big in the West? And I they need New Japan to rebound back here in the States. They need to continue to tour. Strong needs to be a strong show, and it needs to then obviously assimilate some Stardom talent into it. And on the tours, make sure that you have Stardom talent on every one of those shows. That's the only way. I'm not saying it's the only way, but it's going to go the longest way, in my opinion, as it stands right now, to continue to get the Stardom name out there. Because you're not going to get Siri every week or Julia or a lot of women, a lot of the stars, you're only going to get once in a while over here in the West. So again, it's just really to me getting the name out there more and more and more. And if Stardom World, and this is a thing too, if Stardom World and New Japan World can somehow get together and be at least offer the ability to charge one price for both and be able to kind of access them through one portal, I honestly think that's going to go a long way as well too.
Yeah, I would say blue sky, that would be the ideal scenario. I don't know how likely that is, but man, no, it would be great to be able to have that sort of cross functionality, just to be able to bring people in and have that one platform that everyone can look at. I mean, to me, there's a few things. I think that on the Stardom side, and Kevin Kelly said this a couple of months ago on Twitter, I found it really interesting, and I don't think he's necessarily wrong. That he had said, at least at that time, that Stardom maybe almost has a better chance of getting a US TV deal. Obviously, it would be on a niche channel, but of getting a US TV deal than, New Japan would be on just, an Access TV deal, just because of, the uniqueness of the product. Like, there isn't, unless you want to say wow, like, there isn't anything like this at all. On the US side in terms of TV whatsoever. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that plays out or how that plays out. The other thing I want to go back to, you mentioned how glacially New Japan moves sometimes, and they absolutely do. But on this particular night, I give them a ton of credit, in that there was no attempt made at all to prioritize New Japan over Stardom, or have it be that Stardom is, New Japan's little sister, and it's like, we're friends, we're partners, but New Japan is clearly number one, Stardom is clearly number two in this relationship. The way the show is presented, it went back and forth, New Japan, Stardom, New Japan, Stardom, as far as the non-mixed matches. You had the mixed matches, and then you had very clearly positioned as the biggest thing on the show, the main event, the IWGP Women's Championship Tournament Final, which you could split hairs and say, well, it's IWGP, so that makes it a New Japan match. But come on, obviously, if you have Kairi and Mayu Iwatani main eventing a show that has New Japan and Stardom matches, that's a Stardom main event. So I do want to give New Japan credit there. And I'm sure, those are larger edicts from Bushiroad, but you could imagine in years past or in decades past, if something like this was attempted, it would have been a very different scenario. And I think it also filters, and we'll talk about it as we go through the matches, it also filters down to the wrestlers. You had, whether it be Tanahashi being willing to take a back suplex from Micah. Obviously, Tom was all in on, coming off looking intentionally like a fool and getting beat up by both Julia and his tag team partner, Shuri. We had stuff all up and down the card in those mixed matches that there were spots to make it clear that even though in these matches, technically, man versus woman wasn't allowed, in those instances where it happened, there was never a scenario where it was like, oh, okay, these are the women wrestlers of Stardom and they're weak compared to the men. Nobody was positioned that way, and it just, it really was exactly what it should have and needed to be.
I never want to see Tannehill slap a woman again like that.
It was a swat. Kevin Kelly would call that a swat. So that's but she got her revenge in the end. She hit that big back suplex. So it all worked out. We should also note, before we go into the matches, how great of a job Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton did
Yes, they
on the
did.
show.
Yes.
I thought I thought Chris Charlton in particular did a fantastic job. We're so used to him on the New Japan side being the guy that's bringing all the history and the context and making the matches come to life from a background standpoint to make you care. He was every bit that here with Stardom, and Kevin Kelly was, his Kevin Kelly best, just losing his mind, falling in love with the main event as it went on. The only criticism I would have, if I had any nitpick, is just that they kept trying to ask, particularly Kevin Kelly, kept trying to ask Waka Tsukuyama very nuanced questions that required detailed answers that, as much as she does speak some English, that clearly just wasn't going to happen. And they kept going back to that until finally Chris Charlton, the last couple of matches, just kind of took it upon himself to start asking her questions in Japanese that then she could either answer back to him in Japanese or answer in English if she was comfortable. And at that point, it was much better. And she added some insight, but it took them a little bit longer to get there than maybe would have been ideal.
Yeah, they need to figure that out a little bit better there. I mean, it would have been almost really better off with just Kevin and Chris doing it, to be honest. Although, then we would not have gotten when Kevin was talking about her being born in New York, about being born in Manhattan, I think it was, and then he's like, "I'm from Queens," and she was just like, "Oh," and it's like, considering the way the Mets finished up, that's funny to me.
Yes, I enjoyed that. I also enjoyed it was 100% worth having her on the broadcast just for her saying the line, "Natsupoi is damaged by whiskey." That's all I needed. She earned her paycheck. It was accurate. It was 100% on point. It was at least to the same level of analysis that we got from Chase Owens yesterday on the junior tag league opener. Chris Charlton did a great job on those two shows, by the way. If you're a New Japan World subscriber, I don't know how much time we'll have to get into those shows in detail, but Chris Charlton, English language commentary, he was leading. He had Chase Owens last night, and then today he had Alex Zane with him. And Charlton did a perfectly fine job. Obviously, it's much better when Kevin Kelly is there, but at this point, when Kevin Kelly can't be there, at least for Cork and Hall shows where Chris Charlton can be, they 100% should do this again rather than wait for on-demand commentary.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm all for that. Yeah, because again, you can always, if it's that bad for some bizarre reason, go ahead and relay it or something like that
Yeah,
later
Kevin could
on.
record it in the
Yeah.
studio if he has.
But yeah, I'm all for that idea. And again, that's also to an extension of what we're talking about in the UK. Either give me the video and no commentary, or just get somebody in there again, as long as they're not awful. And obviously, Chris trying with Alex, again, when do you ever hear Alex Zane cut promos in the States? For as ubiquitous as a
Never.
character as he's been, it's like you never hear it because that's not how the indies for the most part work. So things like that too, or it's also, in that way, it's a nice little thing as well.
Yeah, 100%. And I also just, while we're on the subject of commentary, I think given how well this came off for not only going back to the historic crossover show, not only Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton obviously calling the New Japan matches or the mixed tags, but calling the main event with Kairi versus Mayu Iwatani, I think we're getting to the point to where, and again, I don't know all the logistics behind this, contracts, everything else, but I think we're getting to the point to where we have to seriously say that Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton calling some of these Stardom pay-per-view events, if they're A, in Japan, Charlton always is, but if they're in Japan, and B, it doesn't conflict with the New Japan show, I think we're at the point where that discussion, if it's logistically possible, should be had because they did a great job.
I agree 100%. And I know Kevin's got a family and, young kids and all kids in school and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know how for it he would be. Hopefully if there's enough dollars, he would do it where I would love to have him there. But at the very least, yes, be remote, have Chris at the shows. They are voices that we all know now. They are very good at what they do. You know, some say they're great at what they do. I don't know if you brought in, and look, if you want to bring in, like, say, Ian Riccoboni and Veda Scott, great. But, like, I would rather just see Kevin and Chris become, like, Bushiroad employees, and then that's what they do. I mean, I to me, because same thing with Taichi Taka Despa, Despy Mania, like that. Anything that is a offshoot of New Japan or a Nagata-produced, a Taka-producer, I want those guys to call it. If New Japan's selling it, I want them to call it. If Bushiroad is selling it, those are the guys I want to call it. They're that good. They've earned it. We've heard Gambino come through. He's fun sometimes, but, you know, as a regular all the time, no. You know, I don't think that Kozlov, again, solid, cool, but
dear
not,
God, no.
But no, Poffo. Oh, come on. You know what that was about. Like, so, like, they're the guys I want to hear. I don't know if that would ever work, but yeah, I'm all for that.
Yeah, and you know, maybe also, which, and we haven't heard this in quite a while, but I believe there are at least one or two of the Stardom pay-per-views where Sonny from Stardom was kind of doing the Chris Charlton role, in that situation.
Yes.
And so him as a third person in the booth kind of being the Chris Charlton for Chris Charlton would be a nice touch
as
well.
Yes.
So
there's
a lot of different directions they could go. But as I said on Twitter, I just, watching this show and seeing how well it came off, seeing the crowd that it drew, and how well the crowd reacted, fans of either company, to the other action that they maybe weren't as familiar with, I just don't know. Like, to me, this is a bit of a demarcation point. I don't know that either company really can be the same after this, and it's going to be really interesting to see how they pursue this. So with that, let's get into the actual show itself, because it opened with something on the New Japan side that I think you and I have been waiting for a long time, and we're certainly not alone in that. The return of the LA Dojo guys en masse to New Japan Pro Wrestling as Alex Coghlan, Clark Connors, Kevin Knight, and a guy that I am so excited seems to be back on the rails, seems to have everything going the way it needs to be, because to me, he has the potential to be legitimately the best wrestler in the world in the next few years, Gabriel Kidd. Defeated Kosei Fujita, Ryohei Oiwa, Yuto Nakashima, and making his debut, whatever, 6'5", somewhere around that range, a skyscraper of sorts here in New Japan Pro Wrestling from Germany, Oscar Leube? I don't believe we have the correct pronunciation of that yet. But this was awesome seeing these guys go at it. And Oscar, for his first ever match in New Japan, he looked great.
He did. Oscar, it's hard not to say Oscar Lube. And I know it's not an Oscar Lube, but for some reason I just keep saying Oscar
I
Lube.
Knew it. I knew that was coming.
You know, it's, look, not Kevin Knight. I don't know what the future is going to be for Kevin Knight in New Japan Pro Wrestling as far as if he'll ever get signed on to be a regular there. But, like, you know, we're all hoping that Kid could come back, and like you mentioned, he's great, and hopefully everything continues chugging along in the way that it is. Hopefully Connors and Coghlan can, you know, keep the injury bug away. We, you know, they are established right now as the bluest of blue chip foreigners that are going to be working for New Japan. But like Kevin Knight being able to go over there, and we saw Bad Dude Tito go over a couple of months ago, you know, where he came over with Jonah. And it's like to see Kevin Knight come over and get this type of opportunity on a show like this, because there's other people that they could have placed in this position.
Even the DKC.
Yeah, exactly. And perfect. But look who it is. I mean, you could have put Alex Zane in this spot. He's there. You know what I mean? It doesn't fit the dojo part of it. But again, it's you. Like, there's other people you could have put there, bottom line. But
It speaks to how good he is.
Yeah.
And the impression he's made.
Hell of an athlete. And he was it was nice to see him involved in that mix with everybody else as well, too. Especially too with Oscar on the other side being a new guy, it gave you more of an excuse to do that. But again, it was, I'm so happy for all of them. I really, really am. And I want to see more LA Dojo against, you know, New Japan or more LA Dojo against New Japan Dojo proper guys, and more feuds, more things like this on Strong, more things like this when they're touring. I love that. And I, you know, sell the merchandise, sell the LA Dojo logo, all that sort of stuff. I wish they would do more, because we've done this for a long time. We've gone through Young Lions with very few blue chippers, where we're talking about Giant Vabo and Kenzo Suzuki and, you know, guys like that. And I always bring up those guys, but they were shining lights of that, where I want the Young Lions system to be highlighted, be part of the show, be showcased more, and be more of a regular thing. And I don't know. I know I'm babbling right now because of the cold medicine and being exhausted and everything else, but like, that whole thing, Strong has been really great for that. And, you know, the Inoki Dojo a long time ago, it was like I was always interested in that. And this is, you know, the actual functioning version of it that we have right now. And I just think there's a lot you can do with it.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of meat on the bone here. And the exciting thing is that, you know, it's been something that's been pushed on commentary, but we're actually seeing it in action now. That the LA Dojo, it's not like the New Japan Dojo proper. The LA Dojo is, yes, it's the training school, it's all of that, but it's also being pushed as a fight club, a faction.
Yep.
And it's almost as though the LA Dojo Young Lions are, they're the Young Lions for the LA Dojo Fight Club group. You know, you've got Clark Connors, Gabriel Kidd, and Alex Coghlan, who are all out of the Young Lions status. Kevin Knight, they're sort of hinting, is getting close to being out of that status. But seeing them be integrated more into New Japan proper, not only on this show, but you look at the Junior Tag League and Tag League with Kevin Knight teaming with Kushida, which is just fantastic. You know, Kushida working at the LA Dojo, you know, helping train in addition to Shibata, here teaming with Kevin Knight. That's only going to help him improve even more. And then the team that I'm most excited about in the entire, really either tag league maybe, is seeing Clark Connors and Alex Coghlan go throughout this tournament. They had a really good match with TMDK on today's show. It was interesting to see Gabriel Kidd rather than Alex Coghlan be the one to drop the fall. You know, it's always interesting to see when you have guys like this, which one is slotted higher, which one is the guy that eats pins versus the one that is protected. We'll see if that continues to have that dynamic between Kidd and Coghlan going forward. And then also Clark Connors teaming with Ryusuke Taguchi in the Junior Tag League. So not only were these guys all over here for this show, but they're going to be a big part of this Tag League tour. And yeah, we started to see throughout this match, you know, the hints of rivalries between, you know, between different guys, whether it be, you know, Coghlan and a Nakashima, you know, Ryohei Oiwa in there. Fujita is always going after somebody, whether it's Minoru Suzuki in New Japan, or whether he's going after other young wrestlers in All Japan when he's made a few appearances there. So, yeah, definitely excited to see the LA Dojo become more of a thing in New Japan proper. I think more than anything else, that's the thing we are waiting for throughout the past couple of years of the pandemic, was seeing these guys come over, seeing how they integrate, seeing the impact they make. And then the other thing coming out of this, which is a discussion for another day, is to me, when you look at how good all these guys are, and then when you also look at how good Narita got at the LA Dojo, what training with Shibata has done for Uemura, I think we're going to be at a point in the next 3 to 5 years, probably 5 years from now, where the conversation about Katsuyori Shibata going into the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame as a trainer, in addition to whatever you want to say about his wrestling career, I think is going to be a very real discussion.
Yeah, it probably will. It'll be interesting too, because and Shima is going to be, you know, there's it'll be interesting, you know, to see where he lands. He should be, in that case, if he starts pumping out guys, again, it is certainly a story for a different day. But yeah, I mean, again, the idea of, you know, shoot a box against Gracie Jiu-Jitsu or whatever, you know, I don't know. That's what this reminds me of, you know, Team Hammer House against, you know, a feud from back in the day. And that's, you know, what the dojo guys are. Again, that's something that I like. And I think it's also useful too for Oiwa and Fujita and Nakajima and all those guys, or Nakashima and all those guys right now, because there are still a lot of names. There are going to be names coming over that haven't been in Japan for a while. The borders are opening back up again. You are going through a system now of getting older guys out, getting older. Yeah, to me, at least, that's what they would seem to be doing. It buys you time to do that and still gives these guys something functional to do besides just wrestle each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also going to help, I think, draw those guys out of their shell. If you saw the post-match promos for the LA Dojo after this, they have no issues getting drawn out of their shell. That was a four bros telling people how badass they are. And so that juxtaposition between the very sort of buttoned up nature of the New Japan proper dojo versus, you know, how guys show their personalities, you know, in the LA Dojo and coming out of the dojo system into being full-fledged members of the roster, you know, that's something they can really play off of in the rivalry between the two groups. The next few matches, I don't really have a ton to say about, Mike. The Stardom Rambo, it was a Rambo. The most amusing thing by far is Saya Iida getting eliminated first and then coming back as super strong Stardom Machine and being the final elimination, as well as Mirai ended up getting the win. The other thing I really enjoyed about this was it was a great introduction into what Saki Kashima is. She's an average wrestler, and that's not a cut. She's like a mid-card wrestler, not overly spectacular, but she developed the perfect cradle that can beat anyone at any time. And we had her doing that here with, what, four or five straight eliminations down the stretch?
Yeah. And it works. It works, and I, as you know, I'm way deep in the tank for Saida. So for her to, and hey, it was always in the tank for Super Strong Machine, at least as far as bits on the show. So hey, Junji Harada, be strongest. The memory to you. So yeah, I got a kick out of this. Although I did think, and I did not realize it was going to be a all woman Stardom Rambo. I honestly thought we were going to get some like random names or random people in there.
Yeah. Oh, you mean as far as like random New Japan names or people from
well, like women's just like Yuji Nagata shows up, or you know, Manabu Nakanishi just is rolling in, and then it's like nine women have to try to lift Manabu Nakanishi out of the ring. Like I did think going into it we were going to get a lot more Gaga and Haha.
Yeah, it was fairly straightforward by Rambo standards. I don't know, part of the idea of that was for some people, this was going to be their first introduction to Stardom, so they didn't want to do anything too ridiculous. But in any event, it filled the pre-show. It was fine. We then get into the main card. Tomohiro Ishii, Yo, and Yoshihashi, along with Leo Rush, making his official debut as part of Chaos in New Japan proper. Defeated the House of Torture. This was fine. I don't really care. I don't really have a whole lot of thoughts about it. Really, my only thoughts when it comes to Leo Rush and Yo are that their match with TJP and Francesco Akira the following night, I guess it would have been at Korakuen Hall, the opening night of the Super Junior Tag League. It was the main event of that show. If you have not had a chance to watch that, go out of your way to do so. Outside of one really wacky attempted double team by Yo and Leo Rush that just didn't work at all, this was a great match. Particularly the Leo Rush Francesco Akira sequences were just like beamed in from another universe. They were so fast paced, and TJP and Akira, for what, having teamed together for a couple months, like they're the junior tag champs, they've only had a handful of matches together, and they are already one of the best tag teams in the world. Just incredible chemistry from two guys that a few months ago had never met.
That's amazing. That is amazing because, yeah, and I think it's a testament too, because you can say what you want about personality-wise TJ Perkins, but he can go. And I didn't even realize if they hadn't met up until only a couple of months ago, yeah, they've gelled incredibly, incredibly well, and they are a fantastic team. I was really surprised that Yo and Leo Rush, when they announced them, it's like, Not that I don't want to see Leo Rush, because I love watching Leo Rush, but it was surprised me that that was going to be the team. You know, two people who have never been in the ring with each other before, to my knowledge. I mean, at least certainly not enough to be a regular tag team in the junior tag division, at least for this tournament. But you know, it's good to hear that everything looked perfectly. And I don't know how much you can rely on Leo Rush because of his, you know, his American independent dates and things that he wants to do. And he's got a lot going on. He seems to disappear and come back a lot. But if he's going to be there on the regular, oh man, please, you know, every strong show, any show that you can get him on live in the States, and then definitely, you know, taking him on tour, please do so.
Yeah, I want more and more of him in Japan. He looked incredible in this match and just brought a completely different element of speed than anyone does in the junior heavyweight division in New Japan proper. So, definitely in the midst of everything else, that's a match to go out of your way to check out. We then had the Queen's Quest versus Donna Del Mondo, six women tag with Izumi, Lady C, and Saya Kamitani defeating Himeka, Mai Sakurai, and Thekla. To me, the most interesting thing about this, and we can hook it back into, and I'm sure we'll talk about as the show goes on, the Saya Kamitani Kairi match the night before, is that as of now, whether it's just a story that they're going to build, because it was definitely mentioned on commentary, or it's just better safe than sorry right now, Kamitani did not use on the previous night or on this night, she did not use the Phoenix Splash. Instead, opting for the, you know, still beautiful 450 splash that she always hits perfectly, mostly uses on the smaller shows. Here we saw her use that here on these bigger shows. So that'll be something to track going forward after the, you know, the unfortunate accident injury in the match with Mina Shirakawa that we talked about on last week's show.
God, and how perfect was she would have been for this show, you know?
Well, are you talking about Shirakawa?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. She would have been great for this show. And I feel really bad for Saya Kamitani because on this show, like if you accept the premise that this show has been in the works for a long time, like even longer than it was announced, it was very clear that either teaming together or going against each other in a singles match, there were strong plans of them doing something with Saya Kamitani and Kota Ibushi. And that obviously all fell by the wayside. And so Kamitani, you know, instead of being featured in, you know, the main event or being featured in, you know, one of these mixed tags, she was just here in this sort of, you know, Stardom six-person tag, almost offer match on this show. So yeah, hopefully at some point, if and when Ibushi ever comes back and that happens under the Bushi Road banner, we get whatever they are originally going to do with Saya Kamitani and Kota Ibushi.
Then it was time for the mixed tag team matches, and I kind of had like the. It surprised me when it was like, okay, we're going to run them all three in a row. Then we're going to have, you know, Muta, then the title matches. I wonder how this is going to go. It was a great idea. I think that was a really great idea in hindsight because anybody that. I don't know. I just, to me, it was like, it didn't feel like they were like getting them out of the way or they stuck them all together. I don't know what it is. It felt like
They
they
were
did it
also different.
in,
I
yeah,
think
that's
that's what
it.
made
Like,
it work.
they felt like they did it intentionally, but unintentionally, that these three happened to go together in a row and they all happened to be just different enough and they were all really good. And I don't know if that's going to be the formula from this point out where your last five matches, it's going to be one Stardom, one New Japan, whichever one, IC title, world title, IWGP, whichever one is going to be, you know, the main event, that's what it's going to be. But then the mixed matches are always going to be your stair step to get to those two.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I certainly think this, as far as a major show going into it, this seemed like the right idea. And coming out of it, this certainly feels like the right structure for a major show between the two promotions. I do think there's a good chance that the next thing we'll see, as far as a Stardom New Japan show, will probably have a little bit different format because in the post-match promos, a lot of the wrestlers talked about reprising their tag teams and doing a mixed tag team tournament. So I wouldn't be surprised if we get a, you know, maybe it's not quite the size of Ariake Arena. Maybe it doesn't have any other, you know, you don't have an IWGP women's title match, or you don't have a US title match or whatever. Maybe it's just the tag tournament, but I could see something like that being, you know, first quarter, maybe second quarter of 2023, if we're lucky.
Honestly, I wish they would make it the fourth quarter of 2023. Stardom always has a big show at the end of the year. Now they seem to be, because of working with New Japan, they're probably always going to run a show in conjunction or close to New Japan on January 3rd. You know, as the, you know, the Dome comes January 4th. I love tag team wrestling. I am not a fan, for the most part, of any tag team league season. It's certainly not in the way that New Japan has done it. And let's be honest. I mean, yes, they're doing the goddess thing here, but there's a level of, you know, gimmickry to that, and that's okay. You know, but it is what it is. You know, the team names and all that sort of stuff. Why not have a 16 team throughout, you know, from November to December into the main shows at the beginning of the year, the main Stardom show, and then the main New Japan show? Why not have them do that? To me, that would be great.
Yeah, it would certainly be something completely different, but I like the idea of basically clearing the deck for whatever, maybe a 2-3 week span of either promotions tours, and instead doing a joint tour where you go, you hit up, when maybe it's not the major buildings in every city, but you hit up a lot of the major cities and you do a mixed tag team league. I had not thought of that, but I love that idea. And I think it's certainly, they're not going to get rid of their tag leagues, but man, it would be a nice, completely different change of pace, much like, in a different way, Fantastica Mania is every year for New Japan when they're able to do that, and yeah, we'll be able to do that next year.
Like Bushiroad's holiday gift, and because you have everybody kind of work, like people would get days off. You know, you can still push every single major feud that you need to going into the Dome and going into, you know, the 29th show. God, what is that called? I'm sorry, I'm brain locking on Stardom's the name of that show, but like,
the show at Sumo Hall on the 29th.
But you know, that to me, you're able to do that and not, again, screw up anything in the builds to those and have a bunch of people at your disposal.
Yeah, exactly. You can do it, you know, November into early December, whatever, like bridging that 2-3 week span to where you can have the promotions re-separate out and, you know, whatever, do their, you know, Cork and Hall shows before the Dome to do whatever final build you still need to do. I also like the idea, and I know we talked about it on a previous show, I really like the idea of, whether it be historic crossover or something else, doing a Stardom New Japan show in that week of the Tokyo Dome, whether it be the day after or 2 days after. We've seen 2 days of Wrestle Kingdom, or we've seen Wrestle Kingdom and New Year Dash. I would love to see January 4th at the Tokyo Dome be Wrestle Kingdom. January 5th be historic crossover, and January 6th be New Year Dash. And whatever building you're having New Year Dash at on the 6th, you do historic crossover in that same building on the 5th. Maybe you flip-flop the dates, but I'd love to see that be, you know, there be more synergy there as well. So, I mean, I can't imagine they're not going to explore variations of any of these ideas, again, considering the success that this show was on every level.
Yeah, and you know what? If anybody out there has heard negative feedback about it or, you know, anything, let us know. Because I'd be interested to hear what people who didn't like it think, or, you know, just because, you know, who actually have legitimate thoughts about it, you know, about any of this as well, too, because it seems like everything has been so super positive about it, and everything, you know, for the most part from the wrestlers, you know, certainly filthy, you know, everybody seems to be pretty pleased with how the thing worked itself out. So, you know, I there's no reason why they shouldn't try to explore doing more things and doing more things in conjunction with each other. I think the only problem I would have with that doing historic crossover in the way that you are putting it is, you are putting a lot of pressure on ticket buyers, And it may be better to spread that out because you're going to have participation a little bit together on the Tokyo Dome anyway.
That's true.
And if the Tokyo Dome ends up going back to 2 days, now you got every reason in the world for Stardom basically to be involved constantly on the Tokyo Dome show. Because let's be honest, if things go well and everything rebounds back in Japan, even close to what it's doing here, if they think that they can sell out 2 days of that dome, much like WrestleMania, that's what they're going to do.
Well, yeah, I think that's, I agree. And I think that is, again, blue sky. In a best case scenario in a couple of years, I would be shocked if they're not thinking Wrestle Kingdom January 4th, New Japan Stardom historic crossover January 5th, both at the Tokyo Dome. I'd be shocked if that isn't the direction that they would like to see things go if everything works out. But, you know, like you said, for a million reasons, you know, we've got a long way to go till we get there. This was certainly a step along that road. And the first step along that road as far as intergender matches, interpromotional matches, mixed matches, whatever you want to say, was here with Zack Sabre Jr. Defeating Shuri and Tom Waller. We touched on it a little bit earlier. Again, like Julia and Zack Sabre Jr. come out, and it just felt so right. Shuri and Tom Waller come out, and it seems ridiculous, but it also just feels so right. Seeing Shuri saunter down to the ring while Tom Waller's music is playing was quite the audio-visual combination. And then Tom Waller just, again...
Did he steal Alex Zane's glasses?
He may have. Those were very Alex Zane-like glasses. He had a beautiful homemade ring jacket. And then he was the foil in this match. We had a great sequence between Shuri and Julia, obviously building to their red belt match coming up on December 29th. And then Tom Waller pulls Shuri off because she's kicking too much ass, like it's a WWE disqualification about to happen. And Shuri had none of that. And Shuri and Julia briefly reprised their team to beat the hell out of Tom Waller mid-match. This was great.
It really, really was. And, you know, I don't think anybody had any more fun than Filthy in there. You know, he and Sabre back and forth. And that's the other thing, too. Just the running place, the running PK down the ramp. I mean, everybody looked like they were having so much damn fun, too. That's what just made it more fun. It was just the fact that everybody was getting such a huge kick out of everything. And Tom with the God's Eye on the jorts. And then Shuri after the match, you know, because I was kind of surprised she did not have a little bit of denim in her gear or anything like that. But if it ends up happening again, and I believe that it will, she is going to be jortsed up and ready to clap away along with Filthy Tom.
Yes, 100%. We also had post-match promos backstage with Julia and Zack Sabre Jr. where they committed to a gear swap for the next time they team. These backstage promos, by the way, if anyone is listening and you've watched Historic Crossover and you haven't watched the nearly hour and 15 minutes of backstage promos, backstage comments that are up on New Japan World, I believe also up on YouTube, do yourself a favor and watch them because it adds so much to what you just watched with the show itself. I don't know that there's anything, and obviously the Tom Waller, very heartfelt, emotional promo backstage with Shuri was fantastic, but I don't think there is anything on the show as far as backstage comments that fully realized the potential of what the New Japan Stardom partnership can be than Taichi, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, Natsupoi, and Tam Nakano backstage after the match. We'll talk about the match right now, but just watch that because, say, Taichi asked Tam Nakano very sheepishly and wholesomely out on a post-match celebratory date to go visit the Sea Otters.
This happened, folks. This is a shoot.
And she accepted. So we need... They are both active on YouTube. That's where we've seen them connect already for at least a year prior to this. So we need video. I don't care about being the elite, but I need to see video of Tam, Taichi, and the Sea Otters chilling.
Well, I tell you what, in your world where you're a Taichi and you're walking down to the ring with Natsupoi and Tom, I'm Yoshinobu Kanemaru. who he literally was the fourth wheel in this exchange somehow. I know there are two men, two women, but man, with that Taichi ring entrance, the girls come out, they've got their song, and they've got Taichi's mask on. And by, yeah, that was awesome too in the post-match, the press conference with what this doesn't really work, this mic? Yeah, no, it doesn't really work. The entrance was fantastic. They were perfectly matched up. And then in there with Desperado, Doki, Momo, and Starlight, which again...
Talk about perfectly matched up. Desperado and Starlight Kid were born to be tag team partners and to hang out together. Again, we talked about just the visuals, how much of this worked. The entrance, you just said, Taichi standing between... Tam and Natsupoi as they do their new entrance singing their song, and he's just standing there stoically as they're wearing his like Phantom of the Opera mask. Just absolute perfection. And then the best part about this partnership was we're informed as they're walking down to the ring as the match is about to start that over the past couple of days, Kanemaru and Natsupoi have been training together, not working on moves. But Kanemaru, Uncle Nobu, has been working to build up Natsupoi's whiskey tolerance so she can deliver a Kanemaru-esque Sartori surprise at some point during this match. So they're waiting for it the whole match.
It was great. It really was great. And Momo, you know, she, when she turned dirty... I for some reason it was like she's a better baby face. I think she's going to be. I'm wrong because her facial expressions and everything throughout the whole thing, too. I thought it was really, really good. Ultimately, Taichi Doki, who I felt kind of the worst for, because you're just looking at it knowing, OK, well, Doki's losing, but. Is it possible that Natsupoi will pin him? No, that didn't actually end up happening. It was the Black Mephisto by Taichi, and he ended up getting the victory.
The Black Mephisto coming right after Tam and Taichi hitting double super kicks.
Yes.
A super kick party from Tam Nakano and Taichi.
Yeah.
Just as we all predicted. that put Doki away. Also, just before that, though, we had the highlight of the match, which was Natsupoi delivering the Sartori surprise, the mist, the alcohol mist. And I take back, we talked several months ago about how well she sold the figure four leg lock. Remember that? The figure four, the dragon screw. And we were saying it was like the best sell job ever.
Yeah.
She sold her disgust at how this alcohol tasted after spitting it out. She sold that even better than she sold the figure four a few months ago. Just tremendous fun. And like I said, their backstage promo somehow was even more fun than this match. All these pairings need to continue. We need more Taichi and Tam. We need more Natsupoi and Uncle Nobu. And we certainly need more of Starlight Kid and El Desperado. I'd be shocked if they don't find a way to team again soon.
Not Natsupoi and Hanma? No? Just once? Just once for me, those two cartoon characters. They're both in Boston Crab selling, crying, just mouths open, dying. That would be fantastic. Well,
you are the one person on the face of the earth that said they look alike.
Well, when they're selling, when they're crying and the mouth is open.
I believe the exact quote last show is, facially, they look a lot alike.
When they're selling. You know who I actually looked a lot alike, and I didn't realize that, at least when they were standing there on the top of the stage? Utami Hayashishita and Hiroshi Tanahashi, who both got their hair did at the same place. They had gear that kind of matches anyway, but that was... When they were standing next to each other, it's like, this is perfect. Same thing with Goto and Maiko a little bit too, but to see Utami and Hiroshi was great.
Really 100% with both of them. And Goto and Maika, such similar kind of characters, gear. The entrance music bears a lot of resemblances. Yeah. Tanahashi and Hayashishita. I mean, in their backstage promo, they each described themselves as what was it, talented, handsome, and attractive.
Yeah.
And then Tana said, well, thankfully, he basically said, thank God for my hair. That's still keeping me attractive. And then he was as he often does when he's
I'm thinking of him on the white horse right now myself.
Him grabbing at his little bit of belly fat afterwards always cracks me up.
Oh yeah, I know. Fatahashi, you know, come on. Oh my God. It's like
It is great. Sorry, go ahead.
no, say big of a liar as Steve Austin. Like, well, I looked in the mirror, man. I don't think I look good. You another guy like Jeff Jarrett who has looked the same for so long. Don't tell me you're not coming back for a Mania match. Stop that lie.
Yeah, it's just a matter of who at this point will be the opponent. But yeah, super, super fun, like we said, with the last match. And then here, Tanahashi and Hayashishida against Goto and Micah. This was, like, you look at the teams, and it's by far the most straightforward of combinations. You don't have, I mean, you had the Shuri, Tom Lawler, odd couple, but also exactly the same deal. You know, you have Julia and Zack Sabre sharing, a bit of London heritage. And then, you know, the wacky odd couples that worked in the eight-person mixed tag. Here it was just Goto and Micah. They're both fierce warriors, and it's Tanahashi and Hayashishida. They're both handsome, talented, attractive aces. And they just went out and had a really good 10-minute match that maybe most interestingly, as we touched on a little bit earlier, was by far the match that had the most of New Japan wrestlers hitting Stardom wrestlers with moves, Stardom wrestlers hitting New Japan wrestlers with moves. So that was it was interesting, and it took you aback even more because you only saw little bits and pieces of it in the previous matches, and it was always just like a shot from a Stardom wrestler getting one shot in at a New Japan wrestler. Here, this was the closest thing we had to, I guess, what would be more traditionally referred to as an intergender match versus a mixed match.
Yeah, because there was that sequence where Micah went after Tanahashi, started delivering forearms. He slapped her down, which led to Goto laying out Tanahashi. And then you had, oh God, what did she do? Was it a sling blade, basically, that.
Yeah, Hayashishida caught a sling blade of sorts on Tanahashi, and then Micah hit Tanahashi with a back
With
suplex.
suplex. So yeah, I mean that everything kind of happened in a row there, and it's like if you've watched again, you know, most of the people listening to this have seen that before, but yeah, it was funny to see. It was where I shouldn't say funny, but it was something else to see, you know, Tanahashi up there getting his back suplexed down. So, you know, again, something, do I want to see it all the time? No, but this is what makes these things special, you know, when it comes to New Japan and Stardom together. So, you know, Goto and Micah throwing the double headbutts, you know, I got a great kick out of all of this, right down to the, you know, the rose and the guitar. So, you know, the
Yes.
rose at the beginning where Tommy handed it to Tanahashi. And then ultimately at the end when they went up the ramp and there was Tanahashi and it was time to play air guitar, but he went over and he found another guitar and he threw it over to
Yes.
Hayashishida. And she, one thing you don't usually think about is, boy, if I gave her a nickname, she'd be Smiling Utami Hayashishida. You never would think that. Except for when she got that guitar, she was so damn happy. And
Yes.
I think she's great anyway. There are some people who don't believe that she can emote. Well, there you go. I think she emoted just fine with that guitar playing and then the promo backstage.
Yeah, and I think we've seen a lot more personality from her this year, whether it be the two things you described here on this show, and then we'll, also the very end of the show, a challenge that she made backstage. Also, the ridiculousness with her impersonating Tam Nakano at different points this year. She's definitely, I think, come out of her shell in a pretty big way. And to me, I mean, I don't know. We'll talk about it. Actually, do you want to touch on right now before we move on to the last three matches on this? Do you want to talk a little bit about, because this clearly involves Utami Hayashishida, about her match with Shuri the night before and about
Yeah.
Kairi and Saya Kamitani?
Yeah.
Because I definitely have thoughts. Shuri is a very, very good wrestler. I love Tom Lawler. I don't know that I would say that Shuri is the best wrestler in the world. I don't think she's the best wrestler in Stardom. I think her title reign has been good, but I think it's been very uneven. Some of the matches have dragged and haven't been that dramatic. Some have been great. And as very, very good as Shuri is, when you watch her wrestle Utami Hayashishida, you really get a sense of how truly great Hayashishida is,
Yeah.
because she brings something out in Shuri not just in terms of intensity, but a type of match and a level of performance that no one else does. And it's not just the fact that, well, these two just mesh so well. They do, but that's not the only thing, because think about back to just a few weeks prior at the last Stardom pay-per-view, that match that Hayashishida got out of a just returning Natsuko Tora. Hayashishida is incredible, and she's improved so much. Like, she was very, very good, but she has improved so much from the match where she won the red belt, I believe it was in Sendai, against Mayu Iwatani a couple years ago, to end Mayu's reign and start her big reign that then got ended by Shuri. She is just on another level right now, and I thought a great, great match between her and Shuri on the 19th. And, you know, I give a lot of the credit to that. Not wholly, but a lot more credit that to Hayashishida than I think a lot of people necessarily give her.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I was thinking the same thing during this match because, you know, they've wrestled now every time they wrestled, it's been a high-profile situation. And the matches arguably have gotten, you know, I want to say they've gotten better and better and better. That wouldn't necessarily be fair. But they've smoothed out a lot. They've evened out a lot. And there seems to be a confidence that Shuri has working with Hayashishida. And how that happens, why that brings that, I don't know what it is. But yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I don't think it's unfair to say, because I put Shuri higher on the pecking order than you do. But with that said, she's probably, you could argue she's not the seventh best wrestler in Stardom. When you go, okay, you got Hayashishida, you got Julia. Again, it all depends on what you like. You got Mayu Iwatani, you got Tam Nakano. It's like,
Izumi, Starlight Kid.
So again, and that's where, okay, you get into that category and you go, okay, well, what do you necessarily like out of this or that? But yeah, I mean, I thought that match was great, and it went damn near a half hour. And one thing about it is Hayashishida makes, you couldn't pay me enough to take a double wrist lock superplex.
That was terrifying.
And then the thing is, Hayashishida again, and it's the fireman's carry moonsault off the second rope. Don't do it. Please don't do that move. That is a terrifying, there is too much to me that can go wrong with that move. But it was a great example of, again, the level that they took it and how good they are together. And it just, they are, to me, one of the better fits. Because I know, Julia, and you put her in there with either person, you had great matches and everything. Like, Shuri and Hayashishida are honestly probably the best fit. And granted, Utami can be everybody's best fit, but in my opinion, that's one of the best fits in Stardom as far as a feud goes.
For sure. And I think it's because they're similar, but they're not so similar that their strengths sort of cancel each other out. And what Hayashishida does well, which is pretty much everything, but what she does well plays to Shuri's strengths and plays away from her weaknesses. The other person that I think, and I've mentioned it a few times on the show, it's such an odd pairing, but the other person that I think is Shuri's best opponent, and they haven't necessarily had a high-profile singles match outside of in tournaments, but Shuri and Izumi, I love together because they're so different, but for some reason it really works. Whereas we've talked about before, like for example, Shuri and Tam Nakano, it doesn't necessarily work. Like their last match was better than the title match that they had earlier in the year, but the styles don't necessarily mesh. But yeah, I thought this was by far their best match since the match they had, the first match they had that got all the headlines was the whatever 5+ star match that went to the draw, you know, went to the draw, then had the double knockout. I thought this was the best match they had since then, whether you go back to the title match they had after that, the tournament time limit draw that they had. This was great. I still think they have one more match in them that will be even better than this, better than the first match that they had that everyone raved about. Because to me, whenever they finally have a big match against each other that Hayashishida wins, it will have a more dramatic build to a finish than a Shuri match does, which again, it's fine. I'm not criticizing it, but it's just, we've talked about before, her matches, her finishes are much more about an accumulation of damage leading to the opponent just not having anything left and being pinned or submitted, rather than this like crazy back and forth, you know, type of thing you'd see in a Tanahashi match or an Okada match or a Mayu Iwatani match or even a Hayashishida match. So I really look forward to them having a big match when that's the result, because I think it'll get to an even higher plane. But great stuff here. And that was immediately preceded by a 30-minute draw between Saya Kamatani and Kairi, which, while I don't think it was quite to the level of the Shuri Hayashishida match, it was really damn good, particularly when you look at the totality of the injuries that Kairi was dealing with, which we found out in more detail after this show. You know, arm, shoulder injuries, a completely thrashed ankle. The fact that they had this good of a match, worked around those limitations. I saw, I can't remember who it was that pointed this out online. Maybe it was on Twitter, on the board, that they pretty much didn't do anything where Kairi had to base for Saya Kamatani. And obviously Saya didn't use the Phoenix Splash, which I would imagine that's as much as anything, just like, we don't want to risk Kairi getting hurt the night before the IWGP World title match or women's title match. But given all those limitations and potential things working against it, they had a hell of a match.
Yeah, you talked about Shuri and Nakano, and before this match, I would argue, and most people would probably say, Julia, that, you know, Saya Kamatani and Tam Nakano are a great fit together. Just a hand-in-glove type of situation.
Absolutely.
But the more I want to see this more. The only other time there's, you know, in the tag, the one tag and that's it. And then there's been this match, and that was great. You know, I thought that was great. I don't know. I think, I don't know what match of the three. I think I'd say Shuri and Hayashishida. You know, I think I would say that. Although Mayu and Kairi, and we'll get to that, was awesome. But like,
yeah, that one's it for me.
Yeah, all three of these matches were tremendous. And this probably would be third, but it's not third by far. And I thought it was excellent. They started off with such a bang. And it was, you know, it would surprise me that they went 30, frankly, because Kairi, though, you know, they went outside the ring almost right away. And Kairi whips Kamiyatani into the post and then hits her with that spear and then takes the chairs out. And it's like, I was really wondering how long they were going to go, but damned if they didn't end up going a half hour, which made sense because it was curious. Okay, how do you, you know, going into the dome, how do you don't want to have Kairi lose, you know, but how was this thing going to play? And it was just a very simple 30-minute draw that was, again, anything but simple as far as them wrestling each other. It was great. It was just, they beat the hell out of each other throughout the whole thing. The end of Kamitani catching the flying elbow and then turning it into an armbar. And the timing was just a little bit off, but Kairi started to roll her up. The referee, I think, hit two. Or maybe I think he hit one, but the bell was ringing already, which led to the draw. But I just, everything that led up to it, once all the craziness kind of ended and they were just really going at it, beating the hell out of each other, kind of getting towards the end, it really, it never lagged and it picked up as it went on.
Yeah, I was very impressed. And I think, like you said, it was really cool because the opening didn't make you think in any way, shape or form, this is going to the 30 minute draw, which is nice because we've talked about before. Sometimes you see matches that are paced in a certain way that makes it very obvious they're going to go to a draw. I would love to know if this 30 minute draw, if this was going to be the finish when they were originally going to wrestle several months ago, before Kairi came down with COVID and they had to scrap that match and Himeka came in instead. And they, her and Kamatani had a great match. But I almost wonder if Kamatani would have gotten the win there, because clearly either way, her reign was going to continue.
You're right. But I agree.
I think there's a non-zero chance that Kamatani would have gotten the win here, because you would have had enough distance between Kairi losing here and then going on to win the title leading into the dome, win the IWGP women's title. You know, it makes me wonder if the original plan was for Kamatani to successfully defend the white belt against Kairi, eventually lose her white belt, and then challenge Kairi for the IWGP women's title on one of the big New Japan shows coming up next year. We'll never know, but I could see that being a scenario. That obviously isn't how it played out. But what we got was a great 30-minute draw. As far as other things on this show, the high-speed title match with Izumi versus Momoka Hanazono was really good. Really good. For Hanazono being someone I haven't seen a ton of, she stayed with Izumi really, really well throughout the match. So I really enjoyed that. And then the Moneyball ladder match, tables, ladders, and chairs match in the main event, they did some fun stuff. They did some crazy stuff. The highlight of it by far, though, was this big Moneyball, which is, how would you describe this? It's like a cylinder holding a bunch of money and coins and doubloons and all this stuff. And there's a button in the corner that you can hit to raise or lower this when you're going to climb the ladder to go after it. They hit the button and it gets lowered to being basically right next to the top of the ladder. And then there's a top rope drop kick spot that knocks the ladder into the ball and the ball explodes and the money falls everywhere on the ground. This is supposed to be the prize for the match. The way you win it is to pull this thing off and you hold it and then you're going to open it up and it's going to be this whole big scene. Instead, it just explodes like 45 seconds into the match. And the look on Thekla's face was priceless.
I was howling at this. There, the only way you describe it is, you know, you get a round plastic ball where there's a piece of gum in it or a bouncy ball or a football helmet or something like that, where it's just like that. And it was hanging on. You know, like you would have a hook, you know, for the Money in the Bank briefcase or anything else. And this thing is being held up there. There's a bunch of jewels and it's oversized, big plastic. And there it is. And every time it's raised and lowered, it's got this, you know, it's got a gimmick sound to it. And like you mentioned, only seconds into it, I think it was Izumi that dropkicked Julia off the ladder. The ladder smacks the thing. Stuff goes everywhere. It's like a pinata. The faces, time stops. It was fucking hilarious. It really, really was. They quickly make the announcement because then it's like they don't know what to do, so everybody's looking at each other. Then they slowly start, everybody that's on the mat starts to go after the money. It gives everybody enough time to wrap. No, you got to go up and get the top part. They announce it to the crowd. The crowd, sure, if they wanted to be in a mood, you could have turned on it and been nasty about it, but everybody laughed about it. It was what it was. The match didn't go on for that much longer really after. I'm not sure how long did the whole thing go for?
9:58. So it was very short. I mean, everybody had wrestled once already prior, you know, so it was very short, but there were some crazy spots. A Death Valley driver off of a ladder bridged on another ladder in the top rope.
Oh, that was pretty. That was sweet looking. And I tell you what, it looked a hell of a lot safer. I stop with this, the Kaguma, the dive off the ladder, because that back.
I love it. It was insane. She got even more air than she did in that ladder match last year. She dove off the top of like the tallest ladder you've ever seen out to the floor. She, like, you're looking for a parachute. She's getting that much hang time.
It's like, let's see, I don't know. Did I write it down? Sometimes I scribble down what the heights and weights are, and she's like a bowling ball up there, and she's up there really high. And the only thing that really worries me about it is, unlike the chair spot earlier on when I think it was Mayu got caught diving on to DDM from the top rope, and they had this pyramid of chairs set up, and they ended up catching her, and they turned around and they threw her into Koguma, I think it was, and they fall backwards, chairs go everywhere. It's like, okay, that was a little dangerous. Somebody may need a tetanus shot looking at some of these chairs, but it looked
it was
worse
safe
than
dangerous.
Was. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It was a safe dangerous, whereas they were so close to the guardrail That's the only thing. It's one of those things. It's like when Julia Hart fell backwards off the on that rampage and her head almost hit. It's what could have gone wrong. So if you're
well,
going to
think
do
back
this,
on Full Gear with Jungle Boy, if we're talking about wrestling from this past weekend, hitting that top rope elbow drop off the top of the ladder, or excuse me, off the top of the cage, but the table and Luchasaurus were a little too far out. So instead of like going through where like your entire side is what puts him through the table, he came up a little bit short and only hit Luchasaurus with his elbow, and the rest of his body just went straight down onto the mat from that height. There's a lot of risk. I think the only thing that makes me less concerned with these big dives from Koguma is she's diving onto like 18 people.
Yes, and that's the it's just when any if people who haven't seen it, it's the where they were. It's just a little scary, and the thing that worries me for the people that are catching her is if they decide to ratchet that up for some reason because she's done it twice. So the next time she does it, whenever it is, it would be a big situation. Obviously, when she did. Don't take it further. You know what I mean?
Don't pass the guardrail and then have her dive over the guardrail onto the gaggle of people, you're saying?
Yeah, because the reality is if left up to their own devices, all of these women would somehow kill themselves in some crazy way. I mean, this is as aggressive. That's the thing, too. I think for people that don't watch Stardom on a regular basis who may have seen some of these women go, like, I don't know. It probably surprises people how hard these women go, you know,
even
and what they're willing to do.
Even on smaller shows, yeah, you're not necessarily going to have a dive off the top of the ladder show, but I always say the thing that, to me, puts Stardom over the top from any other promotion right now as far as being the most entertaining company in the world, show in and show out, is the level of effort that is put in by all of the wrestlers on small shows in far-flung countryside towns. They're going, it might be in a 6 or 8 person tag instead of in a single or a regular tag, but they're going 100 miles an hour. That same crazy Mayu Iwatani barreling through the middle and top rope suicide dive that she does on a pay-per-view, she does that with the same reckless abandon, you know, in front of 200 people in a small town. So yeah, it's definitely impressive to see.
It was a good night, really, you know, and because the only other thing I think I want to say about that show, is there really anything else I want to say about that show? I guess not. Nana Takahashi in you, that ended up being a little bit better than I thought it was going to be, although I think it went long, you know, it is part of the Stardom, the tag league, because there were two matches, a red and a blue. The Momo Watanabe Starlight Kid Kashima Fukigen death match, though, I did get a big kick out of that, and it went 6 minutes. It was probably 3 too long, but I gotta be honest, yeah. I did get a kick out of it, you know, and Starlight Kid ended up getting the victory over Kashima, but Momo and Fukigen at the beginning of the match, that goofiness, it was, you know, all things considered with everything that took place, it was nice comic relief.
Yeah, an intra-Oedo Tai squabble of a tag match. It was fun. It's something different. Seeing who's going to be the more heelish of the high school heels type of group that Oedo Tai is. So yeah, that was that show. Very good pay-per-view. Definitely worth watching. And I would imagine if it's not up on Stardom World by now, it will be momentarily. There's usually about a 3-day gap between when the pay-per-view ends and when the show goes up on Stardom World. Back to historic crossover, because there were still 4 more matches on this show. 10-man tag, United Empire versus LIJ. This was just really your United Empire, LIJ, you know, with Gideon Gray involved. 10-man tag that you'd see on a Cork and Hall show. There really wasn't a whole lot to it other than, you know, another one of the first appearances of Kyle Fletcher and Mark Davis in New Japan proper. As they head into being one of the favorites in the tag league.
They are, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I have now convinced myself that Naito and Sonata are going to get the victory and then win the titles from FTR on the 4th. We'll
Or even
see.
on the fifth, Naito threw out, I can't remember whether it was after his short crossover or when it was, but in the last couple of days, he threw out the possibility of, instead of that being down the card on the fourth, he wants the tag title match coming out of the tournament to be the main event of New Year Dash.
Okay, now I'm guaranteeing that Naito and Sonata are going to win the thing.
Because it would open up Naito to still have a big singles match at Wrestle Kingdom. And it would be a way as well to, if you're going to have FTR lose the titles, it just seems too obvious to have them lose the belts to Aussie Open right away. Having them lose it to Naito and Sonata, and then having Naito and Sonata lose the belts to Aussie Open, and then some point next year in the summertime, having FTR come back over to Japan, or doing the match in AEW either way, where Aussie Open gets their win in a defense, gets their win back in a defense over FTR. That's a more interesting scenario to me than the more direct path.
By far, because they're there. You know, Fletcher and Davis are going to be there. So having a Chaos Ultimate, or having an LIJ United Empire feud and having that going, that makes a lot more sense to me too. You know, to have Naito and Sonata take the belts off of FTR, and then that's the feud between, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm actually all for that one for sure.
Would it also open up the possibility for FTR to then be able to be on the big Seattle debut for AEW? You know, that's on the same day as Wrestle Kingdom. You know, if they're not on Wrestle Kingdom, but then they fly out right after AEW, and then they wrestle on New Year Dash and defend the tag titles, that may be an out as well.
You know, what's going to be really interesting is if Naito has a singles match, it in all likelihood would be against an outsider. And with AEW running and already Kenny Omega, you know, possibly not, he won't be there. I mean, yeah, I guess he could fly back over. But as it stands right now, that's one of the reasons I guess they didn't do the Best of Seven Elite, you know, Death Triangle thing on that date, is because Kenny won't be there. But is it Chris Jericho and Naito? Is it Moxley? I'm, you know,
yeah, to me, Moxley is the guy, but it all depends on how many guys they feel like they can spare for that show. But Moxley and Naito is such a unique, fresh match. And like those two characters cutting promos on each other in the weeks leading up to that, and just the idea of them standing across the ring from each other, on a grand stage like the Tokyo Dome for Wrestle Kingdom. If they don't do it this year, hopefully they can do that next year.
Yeah.
Or if they don't do it in 23, hopefully they can do it in 24.
It's very interesting to me. That really is really interesting to me if they do decide to do something like that. And really, Naito's path this year is going to be really interesting to me anyway, from a singles point of view. You know, it intrigues me as what 2023 is going to bring for Tetsuya Naito. And frankly, for Kota Ibushi as well, too, because again, Kenny Omega going over there. Again, to me, in my mind, and this is just speculation that I'm creating in my mind, but it's like, I can't see, as loyal as he is to Kota Ibushi, he wouldn't be going over there if things weren't solid, which means, man, maybe hopefully we can see Kota Ibushi back in the mix here in the next, you know, 8 weeks or whatever it is that you know, gets us into January. But one of my favorite promos of the entire night came from Jeff Cobb, who met the Great Muta in Great Muta's last match. I wish this was also taking place at Tokyo Dome or something with Great Muta, but he decided to have his last match along with Kazuchika Okada and Toru Yano in his never-ending end-of-career life feud with the Great Okan, Aaron Hanare, and now Jeff Cobb involved gets blinded. Gets blinded by Muta. Okada got the victory over Hanare. Cobb stumbles.
He got blinded by the Great Okan. The Great Okan.
I'm sorry.
Accidentally blinded him. And now going forward, this is a story with the Great Okan, because today on the Tag League show, Great Okan tried to use the mist and accidentally blinded Hanare.
Hanare. So he is a... maybe
now.
We will get something at the Dome where it's a skit or something. There's no match. But he once again is the Wile E. Coyote to the Great Muta's Roadrunner or something.
On that front, who knows what the hell is going on? Because Great O'Khan kind of called out Shinsuke Nakamura. So are we somehow going to end up with the Great O'Khan and Shinsuke Nakamura at the Tokyo Dome on January 4th? And is Great Muta going to come out and cost Great O'Khan the victory against Shinsuke Nakamura? Who the hell knows with the way things are going in
Can
wrestling
you
right now?
imagine a conversation between Paul Levesque and I don't know who it would be? Would it be Obari? Would it be Rocky? Whoever it would
I
be, but
want a
like,
three-way call between Triple H, Gato, and Tony Khan
that's
figuring out how this all can work with Kenny Omega, Shinsuke Nakamura, and the Great Muta. And then also, you got to get Nosawa in there, too. Don't forget that.
all right, Paul, you fucked us on Carl for so here's the idea that we got, okay? And this is because look, so Nakamura is obviously already coming over. It's gonna be a unique beginning to the year in Japan. It really is
Yes.
wacky. And I guess this will be a good time to mention Carl Anderson will be making his way to Saitama on December 14th. One would assume to drop the belt to Aaron Hanare or to Aaron Hanare to Hikuleo. I wonder if we get extra Tongan support in the in a Meng or somebody like that, making sure that the Good Brothers do what they need to do on that day.
Yes. Hopefully this is the end of that. I still wonder if there's going to be another chapter of to this beyond December 14th, I believe in Sendai, and this is still going to stretch out to Wrestle Kingdom. Hopefully not. Hopefully this will be the end of that. We
Did
can
I say
all
Saitama or Sendai?
you I don't know which one you said, and I'm not sure which one it is. So
Or did I do a hybrid of both and it was Sentaida or something?
that
This is
may
not
be the
my day,
most
folks.
likely
I
scenario. Actually,
apologize.
here. All right, I've got it right here. It is in Sendai. That
Sendai,
is
okay.
it's the finals of the Tag League and Super Junior Tag League, and then also ostensibly Carl Anderson and Hikuleo for the Never Open Weight title.
So,
So with all that said, let's round back to historic crossover and talk about the final two matches, which were both great. We had Will Ospreay dressed up like Hayabusa, which, my God, this was incredible,
oh, that's
particularly
cool.
if you read the backstory and how Ospreay went to Hayabusa's family and got their blessing and the proceeds from this. He's going to auction off the gear and it's going to go to the family. They were going to do this back in May. Then he got sick and they couldn't do it, so they decided to do it now. So cool. Not only the Hayabusa pants, he had the mask on during the entrance. Will Ospreay successfully defends the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship against Shota Umino in what I thought was a very good match. I thought it was a little bit better than their very good match they had at Royal Quest 2. I'm more sold on Shota Umino than I was 6 months ago. I still am not sold on him as being the guy. This is going to sound really weird, but he's a victim of his own like body dimensions. This is going to sound really strange, but so much of his offense looks so weird because he has incredibly short arms and he's also a smaller, like he's got to be the smallest pushed heavyweight that they've had in a long time. I just can't figure out what it is about his offense. Again, I think it's part of his the short arms. It just looks strange, and there still are certain things that he's trying to get over as signature moves that just don't work. Like that, like 1.5 rotation, like reverse neck breaker that he does. Someone just needs to say stop, just like someone told Saya Kamatani to stop doing the running shooting star press 1.5 years ago, and we're all better off for it. Same thing, at least I assume, because she stopped doing it, so someone must have said something. Same thing here with this neck breaker. It just doesn't work. But otherwise, this was a pretty damn great match still, and Shota Umino looked very good.
Yeah, I feel a lot more confident in his future, I think, seeing it, and again, you're in there with Will Ospreay, who he's already had a match with, and it's hard to I don't want to say look bad with Will Ospreay, but
it is
kind of hard to look bad against Will Ospreay. But there's a little bit of a disconnect.
Look bad with Will Ospreay.
So there's a disconnect with me with Umino in. You bring him back as Roughneck Umino with frosted hair, long flowing like Tanahashi. He's got these. They're slick looking trunks. The white and pinkish. You know, kind of like splatter paint trunks. I mean, they look like, but it's not. I don't know. There,
he doesn't look like a roughneck.
No, and it's like I don't know exactly what the nickname or whatever should be or the whatever. But it's like there is a little bit of a disconnect with me there too. And he is, you know, it what benefits him greatly is the fact when he's in there with Ospreay, you know. Ospreay's not the biggest guy in the world, so it helps. But it's also, it's like, when you think that Ospreay's not the biggest guy in the world, you do see how slim that Umino is. And he is going to thicken out more as he goes along. But it's like, do you think he's 200 pounds?
No, I don't think so. And it's a conundrum because when he did get a lot bigger, when he swelled up in Rev Pro,
too bulky.
It was the worst he's ever looked as a pro wrestler as far as functionally in the ring.
Yeah.
He slimmed down a lot in the last couple of months, and he performance-wise, it's the best he's looked since he's been a young lion. But it's an odd visual, even in this era of heavyweights that aren't as big as they were 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. Like, he's in the ring. He's significantly smaller than Will Ospreay, and Will Ospreay is not a big heavyweight by any stretch. So, you know, in the end, it shouldn't matter because you look at guys that are champions all across the world where you don't have a junior heavyweight delineation, and he's not too small. But in a world where somehow Alex Zane and Kevin Knight are junior heavyweights, looking at Shota Umino and seeing him as a heavyweight, it's just an additional thing for him to overcome. And I think he's at the same place that, not size-wise, but just in ring-wise, but we really not control when he is in control of the match. I mean, he can get there. Kiyomiya has done it to an incredible degree this year, so he can get there, but there's still some more distance for him to travel.
Yota Tsuji, have you seen him at all in CMLL or any of the clips or anything like that?
I have not. I think we talked about on the last show how I was kind of disappointed by his performance in the match with Ishii at Royal Quest. So I'm excited to see what he does in CMLL. I'm very interested to see if we look back 5 years from now and you look at the guys that have gone through, as we mentioned earlier, the LA Dojo, obviously all the non-Japanese guys, but particularly we look at Narita and we look at Uemura, how they develop and the ceiling that they eventually reach compared to Shota Umino and Yota Tsuji, who have not spent any time at the LA Dojo, and it doesn't appear like either of them are going to. It'll be very interesting to see the finished products of those four guys and if we can draw conclusions about the training based off that.
Yeah, and like Yota Tsuji as a personality was the perfect one to go to CMLL. I think he was the perfect one to go overseas. Frankly, I think he would have been the perfect one to send to if it was functional in ROH, like a him in Impact. I'm surprised didn't happen. Maybe it did and I missed it. But
I don't think it did.
He seems to be the most Western one personality-wise of the bunch, but I think you're exactly right. First of all, I think Uemura of those four, yeah, he probably, if I had to put money on it, you know, he's the one right now because, like you mentioned, there's something about Uma, and I really like watching him so far, and I like the way he's developed. You can't say anything bad about the stair steps that have been taken, but now that he's at that step, I worry. And it's not the same Wataru Inoue as a heavyweight worry that I have, but it's like, in the same sort of way, it's like, I'm starting to question how far he's going to be able to step and, you know.
He's Goto.
That's what I wonder. It's like already I'm thinking, and this is really stupid since he's only had a handful of matches, you know, like this and just came back under this gimmick, is I'm already thinking, is he going to be better off as a tag team wrestler with somebody?
Yeah.
You know, whereas Narita and Umura, and even to a lesser extent, Tsuji, you know, I don't. So we'll see. And again, and this is in an age too where it's like, Okan is going to be there. All your foreigners, like your Cobbs and all that, all these other guys that are coming in too, that he's going to be up there competing against. It's going to be really interesting to see how it goes, but he can sell his ass off. The dynamic of, you know, the father being there as well too, it's worked perfectly with Ospreay. So yeah,
that spot was great with Red Shoes Uno about to call off the match, calling back to their Royal Quest match. Shota grabbing his leg and telling him, no, don't do it. And no, that's a great point that you just made. He is a tremendous seller at this point. So he's got that down already. I look at him and I just wonder if the ceiling is that just below top guy like Goto was for such a long portion of his career. And there's no shame in that. Not everyone can be the top guy. Whereas like Uemura, I watch him and I think, like, this is going to sound, when I say this, I know this is going to sound ridiculous, but this is how high on him I am. When I watch Uemura right now, and who knows if there's injuries, if for some reason he leaves, whatever. When I watch him right now, to me, his floor is Tanahashi. He's that good.
I look at Uemura, and for me, it's Uemura and Clark Connors. If you held a gun to my head and said you get one foreigner, you get one native, who are you taking? Those are my two.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think with Clark, it's going to be interesting to see if he ever moves beyond the junior division. He's that short power junior. If he ever moves beyond that to be a heavyweight.
Well, that's what I wonder about with Narita. Is like, yeah. Is Narita actually, because at some point, obviously he will, but like, he's a junior heavyweight.
He's a tough one, because to me, like, when I, and maybe it's just me wish casting, but when I watch him, I don't think junior, I think heavyweight. But I mean, the TV title we saw in the tournament is open weight pretty much. So, you know, that will kind of play itself out for me on the Japanese side, as far as guys who are either young lions or on excursion, in either of those scenarios, it's without a doubt Uemura. And I think everyone else is not saying they're not good. They're very good, but they're not close. I just think he's on a different level. And then similarly for me, on the non-Japanese side, in terms of guys that are coming through the New Japan system, are young lions, were young lions, and are now, you know, full-fledged roster members. Again, with the caveat of if he can keep himself on track, I think Gabriel Kidd is far and away the top of those guys. Like, I salivate over the idea of 3, 4, maybe 5 years from now, a generational rivalry between Gabriel Kidd and Yuya Uemura. Like, I look at that and I think those are the guys that can take, you know, you talk about, you know, Tanahashi and Okada and that rivalry and how much that sort of raised the level of wrestling in Japan, or Okada and Omega, just in terms of what heights a match can go in ring. I really think that Uemura and Gabriel Kidd could be that next combination if everything stays on track. And that's a big if all across the board.
And is he the biggest size-wise? I think he is, isn't he?
What's that?
Who's the biggest? The kid is the biggest size-wise, is he not?
I would say, I mean, he's definitely the most firmly planted as a heavyweight. I mean, this is obviously taking Carl Fredericks out of the equation.
Yeah.
Who knows if he'll ever be back in New Japan. There were some interesting hints at that over the weekend in the commentary. But, yeah, he's definitely a full-fledged heavyweight, not a giant, but he's a heavyweight for sure. Uemura he's small. Like he's small like Umino is, but he added a lot of bulk. And I feel like unlike Umino, it hasn't hurt his mobility at all. And when I watch him in ring, it's just like, it's so undeniable. He's not 5'4". He's not so small that it's not believable. And he's so great that I don't want to say you can't waste him in the junior heavyweight division, because that's overly harsh, but you can't waste him in the junior heavyweight division. He's such an incredible wrestler at everything already this early on. And there's enough there size-wise that in this era, he can be believable as a heavyweight, that you have to run with him at that. So
well,
yeah,
I'm
that's
so
a
happy we've evolved to the point too where it comes where you don't have to, with the open weight titles, with just the wrestlers getting smaller in most cases, the fact that you don't have to be one, or the ability to go up and down for more people, you know, for really, frankly, everybody, you know, that option being there and that being accepted by the fans and that being a thing is okay. I'm so happy that that's the case, because you don't have a situation like an Inoue where we're going to do with what we always did. And he's going to go up through the juniors and you're waiting the whole time. It's like, here's going to clean out the division. Then he's going to go to a spot and it's like, it's not going to work. Well, we're going to give him Nagata. It's like, still not going to work. And it's just, I'm happy that they're able to do that. Whereas maybe you could have started him as a heavyweight. Okay, it didn't work. I don't know. There's different things. Again, the options you have by not adhering so strictly to weights is great to me.
100%. There's certainly less, it's more walled off than it is in North America, but it's less walled off and more fluid between junior and heavyweight in New Japan than I think it's ever been in the company's history. And, you know, that can only be a good thing going forward. So I guess as we talk about things changing in New Japan and in company history, things evolving, there's no greater example of that than the fact that we now have an IWGP Women's Championship and an IWGP Women's Champion in what I thought was, again, this is a very, very, very high in my match of the year list, and I'll have to go back and watch, you know, whatever, the 15 or 20 matches that I kind of feel like I've said that about throughout the year to see where this fits. But Kairi defeating Mayu Iwatani, 25 minutes, 28 seconds, incredible match, incredible drama. Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton did a wonderful job on the call. And this, to me, the most important thing about this was that it felt as big and as dramatic and as consequential as it should have, given the stakes, given how long it's been in coming for this to happen. And it was the perfect two wrestlers to pull this match off. You know, I would have loved to have seen Mayu Iwatani win, particularly as the match went along. Just, I saw her selling everything is just incredible. And this match was a reminder of, oh yeah, she hasn't had a lot of these in a while because she hasn't been put in this spot. But yep, Mayu Iwatani just might be the best wrestler in the world. And then the performance that Kairi put on, even more impressive than the night before, because again, she came into this weekend with those injuries, went through a war in 30 minutes with Saya Kamatani, and then had this absolute gem of a match with Mayu Iwatani to win the title. Just can't say enough good things about this.
Better than the match with Julia for Mayu?
I think so. You're talking better than the 30-minute draw that they had?
Yeah.
I think so.
Because you know what that leaves, Adam? The best matches that Mayu Iwatani had were, of course, against Io Shirai. And Kairi coming back, I swear, this, I don't want to say it was the, I don't want to say it was the best match I've ever seen Mayu have, but boy, I tell you what, it was, I will say this, really nice to see Kairi back, you know, being Kairi and being in this high profile match that I thought she was going to win anyway, but then there was some doubt as the match was going on creeping in my mind. Well, okay, maybe they do Mayu because of the movie and this and that.
Yeah, the movie, Mayu just traveled to New York for the New Japan show, yeah. So she's obviously open to traveling and defending it internationally. They also did the whole story with Mayu giving up the SWA title going into this match that made you think, well, maybe she'll win.
And she's Miss Stardom. She has been there. Every, you know, anybody that's gone or come back or any of that sort of stuff, she has been, you know, the standby. So as it was going on, and it was like, it really was a great match. And again, I really like Shuri, you know, Tommy too, you know, but the story again, and this was told very early, obviously Mayu going after Kairi's arm so she can't drop the insane elbow, and Kairi going after Mayu's back, but it was just really, really great stuff. And the crowd, again, obviously the people that wanted to be there wanted to be there, but like, as the crowd continued on with it, and again, this was the main event. This was the main event of the very first show that New Japan had with Stardom. You know, this is the main event, and it lived up to it.
Oh, it absolutely lived up to it. And again, the pressure that was on their shoulders, knowing what this was and knowing the limitations due to injury that Kyrie had coming into this, I really don't think it could have come off any better. Just so many cool little things. You always talk about not only Mayu Iwatani selling in terms of like, oh, she got hit with a move and now she's selling and it's drawing you in, but the things she does between moves, so it doesn't just look like she's laying there, standing there, waiting to get hit. The first insane elbow that she kicked out of, where Kyrie goes to the top rope and Iwatani is struggling to sit up and trying to get to her feet, and then just gets drilled down by the insane elbow coming off the top from Kyrie, and then kicking out from that. A great near fall. And it was just awesome. It was like, not that Kevin Kelly doesn't like Stardom. He obviously does. You can hear that, you know, whenever he mentions it on New Japan shows, you can hear it whenever he tweets about it. But you could hear him in real time as this match was going on and as he was calling it, come to me what sounded like even more of a realization of how incredible of a wrestler Mayu Iwatani is, how great Kyrie is, and how much of a star she is, and how great this match was. Like, you got the impression as it went along that he's like, holy shit, this is every bit as good as the best IWGP title matches I've ever called at ringside before. This was also, and I guess not surprisingly, given who the opponent was, I thought this was by far the best Kyrie match she's had since her return, which again is even more incredible given the injuries that she was dealing with that are not just like, oh, it's a little bit of pain. They're injuries that impacted things that they would be able to do during the match, but they're both so great. They're both such great veterans and pros, and they know how to wrestle that they're able to work around that and have a match that wasn't any lesser for the limitations that they had to work with it.
Yeah, it kicked ass.
That's a much better way of putting it than I just said.
And, yeah. You know, and again, a day after that match with Kamatani, too, that, again, I agree with you. I think Kamatani probably would have beaten her if that match had taken place a couple of months ago. But it worked out the way it worked out. They go to the draw. Now we'll see what happens with Kamatani and Julia. You know, that's the thing is, okay, Kamatani, Julia Kyrie. It just every combination you start putting together there, and obviously now Mayu, you know, we'll see what happens with her exactly, you know, deciding what path they're going to go with that. Also going to be interesting to see what they do with the SWA title. In my opinion, I hope it goes away, not because I have any bashing towards it or anything like that. It's just, to me, and I understand that Gato has got basically the book when it comes to that championship, the reality is, that's Stardom's title. I know everybody's going to look at the IWGP title, but when you're having women from Stardom wrestle for it, anytime it's time to go out overseas and all that stuff, to me, that really should be the only world title Bushiroad should be worried about, should be the IWGP women's world title, unless it's an inter-promotional match with AEW or somebody like that. Like, to me, to muddy it up with SWA, well, that's a Stardom title. To me, that's like Tony Khan saying, we're only running 4 pay-per-views a year. ROH and New Japan didn't count. Like, no, it's all the same thing. And that's, in my opinion, that's how I look at that SWA title. It's time for it to go away. You have the right representative right now with Kyrie. Wherever they decide to go with it, I think that, to me, should be the only world women's belt. Again, other than the World of Stardom title.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just as a point of clarification on the and maybe I misunderstood you, but on the IWGP women's title, even though that is an IWGP title, everything I understand is that that's still, it's being booked by Stardom. Like, Stardom has the booking control of that championship.
So if especially now, really then in that, if that's the case, truly then, really forget it. You know what I
yes.
mean?
Yeah, it adds to your argument to just seal the SWA yes. title at this point.
You can always bring it back later if you need to, but since the IWD International Wrestling Grand Prix, that by its very definition is it's the international touring title that in theory the SWA title was until this partnership came to be. So, yeah, especially exactly. in that case. And again, too, it will be interesting to see how Rocky and Rossi Ogawa and Gato and everywhere else where they go to Rev Pro and the, all the other hands, AEW, all the hands in the mix, it is going to be fascinating to see how everything works with it. Everybody works with each other and works within, you know, the parameters that they're going to have to.
Yeah, it's the AEW side is interesting too, because we've really only seen them. They have a pretty strong relationship with Tokyo Joshi Pro. We haven't seen the Stardom relationship come to fruition yet, even though everybody involved has talked about it. That said, it's not necessarily a barrier because, I mean, look at on the men's side. AEW, you know, they work with New Japan, obviously. They work very closely with DDT. We just saw that in terms of them signing Konosuke Takeshita, but he'll still also work some DDT. They just brought in Jun Akiyama for that incredible match with Eddie Kingston on Saturday night. A little bit of Pro Wrestling Noah involvement there as well with Great Muta. So,
are you okay with Konosuke Takeshita being full time here?
Yeah, okay. I don't see any other direction it was going to go but that. Once he came over here, and you know, we talk all the time, like you see a wrestler in their home promotion, and then you see them go to a different promotion in a different country, and you just sometimes it doesn't translate. Takeshita translated to an incredible degree. Like to me, within a couple times of seeing him in AEW, like the only question was whether AEW was going to get him or WWE was going to snap him up somehow. He's such a star, and he translates so well to American television that to me, it's a no brainer. It sounds like he's moving here full time. My guess is we'll probably see him work a couple big DDT shows a year, maybe Cyber Fight Festival. But outside of that, I think it's going to be mostly AEW. And I'm okay with that. You know, I really got that impression that he was going to be gone after the match he had with Higuchi, whatever it was, a month, 2 months ago. It felt to me like he put every single ounce of his being into that match and into making Higuchi the guy in DDT, basically saying like, here, I'm going to do this. I know you're going to be okay. He's the guy. And let's just, you know, let's go out and do it. And then I'm going to move on.
Yeah. And yeah. And that's it. It's interesting. Both Takeshita and Bandido being there. It'll be interesting to see what tact they take with both of those guys. It'll be interesting to see.
Because what happens with Juice?
Oh yeah,
Juice Robinson. I mean that came out that he had signed, and we haven't really heard anything since then. So that'll be interesting as well, because that's a guy who we talk about. Guys coming over from a different promotion, does it translate? Does it not? I think the jury's still out on that, based off the match he had with Moxley a few weeks back.
I completely forgot. Yeah, whoever he lost to that last match in Impact was. It's been a long time now, and then that was that, and. Damn, they have a lot of people under contract, don't they?
That they do. They have a few dozen, a few hundred people.
Oh, God, Tony Storm and Kyrie. You know, that's the other thing, too. Tony Storm now has the ability to work a Stardom show again. Jamie Hayter has the ability to work a Stardom show again. And we're all for that, right? If not, we should be.
100%. That needs to happen at some point for sure. As far as other things going forward in the future, coming out of historic crossover, Tam Nakano came out and challenged Kyrie for the IWGP Women's Championship. So that you can add that to the docket for Wrestle Kingdom, which already has Okada versus Jay White for the IWGP World Title. Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay. We shouldn't leave that out. That was revealed here on this show as well. That for the United States title. So, but that's what's coming up for Kyrie at Wrestle Kingdom. Before that, though, she'll be wrestling in a non-title match, Utami Hayashishida, on the December 29th show at Sumo Hall, which also has Julia versus Shuri for the World of Stardom title. So, a lot going on. We also have coming up another one of the wacky Stardom and Showcase shows Is coming up in a few days on pay-per-view and then will make its way to Stardom World as well. So a lot going on in the world of Bushiroad governed professional wrestling, much less everything else going on in Japan that we will certainly get into on the next show.
Yeah, we gotta we ought to leave it here since we're damn close to old school 2 hour point that we used to do shows. But yeah, there's still a lot going on. It is tag league season. There is a lot shaking in Dragon Gate and all over the place, and we'll get
you got
into all
Japan's.
That. Yeah,
all Japan's tag league going on. You got the Dio tournament going on in DDT. Glate's got shows coming up.
Freedoms has got a junior division, I think, now with a new championship there. So
yeah, exactly. So there's plenty of stuff to keep us occupied. Pro Wrestling Noah cheering show at Yoyogi National Stadium Gymnasium. So a bunch of stuff going on. We'll be back very soon to talk about it all. But yeah, I think it's time to tell people where they can find us otherwise, because got to close this out. You can find me, Wrestling at Random, the show I do with Jeremy Deamer, wrestlingatrandom.com, or just search Wrestling at Random wherever you get your podcasts. On Twitter, at Wrestle at Random, you know about it. We watch old shows that are randomly chosen for us. We review them. YouTube channel where you can watch video of the show. So check that out. And also, Three Count Fall, considering how much Twitter seems to be dying, I'm going to need other avenues to get my my thoughts about wrestling out. So I foresee in some way, shape, or form activity there picking up. And yeah, as you mentioned, Mike, you are on Hive. I will be joining there and a few other sites, so we'll tell people about where they can find us on social media beyond Twitter in the coming weeks as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And for right now, Twitter is still the best place, at SemperVivi. On Hive right now, at SemperVivi as well, too. Same, pretty much the same header, same picture, all that sort of stuff. Wrestling Observer Live, Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast, which I'm going to have some updates on here pretty soon. But if you ever just wanted to support me, that's how you can do it, through the Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast Patreon. I'm working on it's 18 pages on the Google Docs drive when it comes to the history of tag team wrestling in the Carolinas and how we got Ricky Steamboat, Jay Youngblood. So it was not supposed to go that long, but that is going to actually be the debut of shows that I'm doing on Patreon. And the free shows are, again, I'll have an announcement on the regular Mid-Atlantic Championship podcast. That is going away for a while as I continue to work on other things that frankly are going to lead to the road to Greensboro. So if you do want to support me, you can do that. Patreon.com/Mid-Atlantic Podcast. I do this show with Adam. That's the one we're really most worried about. That, and of course, the wrestling news, thewrestlingnews.com, every day between 6 and 20 minutes, everything that you need to know from the world of professional wrestling in digest form. No conjecture, no rumors, no nonsense, no storybooking, no wish casting, none of that stuff. Just the news that you need. Wrestlingnews.com, on Twitter, at WrestlingNewsAV. Very proud of that. Myself, Brian Solomon, who you'll be seeing come up soon on the, if you've never seen him before, on the Vince McMahon Vice documentary. He was interviewed alongside Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer and many other people there. So we're very serious about that. I'm very serious about that. So love doing it, and obviously love doing this show as well, too. So we will be back soon.
Yes, absolutely. And just wanted to give another shout out. Not that you need anyone to lend credence or validity or whatever else. My brain is fried after 2 hours. But the wrestling news is awesome. It is the best way to keep up with, as Mike said, wrestling news without all the other BS, whatever. What is it? 8, 10, up to 20 minutes long. Any given day, it's consistent. It's professional. It's everything I want out of a wrestling newscast. So everyone else should check it out as well if they aren't already listening.
Yeah, and this is not a lie to say. You know, listen to the wrestling news podcast that people who do news on the radio and sports news on the radio consider their favorite now. And so I think that's That's really cool, and hopefully that means something to you because it does to me, but it will speak for itself. Every day around 8:30 in the morning, just go to thewrestlingnews.com, or if you have an Alexa gimmick or a Google Home Nest gimmick or one of those things, just ask them to play the Wrestling News Podcast.
Yes, and make sure to say the Wrestling News Podcast.
That's right. Alexa can be a little witchy about the whole thing, but, you know, so that's how that goes. But, yeah, Adam, 2 hours. PPH level stuff, but again, a lot to get into. There was a lot of fun stuff. We did a lot of rambling as well too, but New Japan Stardom Historic Crossover Show, definitely watch the mixed matches. And when it comes to the Stardom pay-per-view, if you haven't had the chance, you didn't get a chance to order on pay-per-view, my God, for the money that you kick out every month for Stardom World, more than worth it to check that thing out. In fact, you should be paying them even more than what it costs for Stardom World a month just for that show.
Yes, 100% agree. So before the marbles completely fall out of our mouths, let's close it down. We'll talk to everyone next time.